I was down in the basement of this huge office building the other day. I was actually just, looking for the restroom. And I walked past this utility room, and the door was cracked open just a bit. And inside, it was just wall-to-wall gray metal cabinets. You've seen them, right? Usually humming a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. The ubiquitous gray boxes.
Yeah.
They're in every factory, every building, usually tucked away in some dark corner where nobody ever goes.
Exactly. And I think for most people, we walk right past them. They're just background noise. Maybe you see a yellow high voltage sticker and you kind of instinctively step a foot to the left, but that's it. But standing there looking at this wall of steel, it just hit me. I have no idea what is actually happening inside those boxes. I mean, I flip a light switch upstairs and the light comes on, but there's this massive infrastructure between me and the power plant making that happen.
Well, it's easy to ignore because, it works so well. But if you actually cracked open one of those enclosures, which, please, nobody do that, you wouldn't just see wires. You'd see what's basically the nerve center of the entire building. It's not a storage locker. It's a highly engineered ecosystem.
An ecosystem, that makes it sound, alive. Or at least active.
In a way, it is. It's really a defense system. An electrical panel. It's designed to do two things that are constantly fighting each other.
Okay, what are they?
Deliver incredible amounts of energy to keep everything running, while at the same time trying to stop that same energy from killing people or burning the place down. Mm-hmm. It's a balancing act. Power versus safety.
So that's our mission for this deep dive, then. We're going to mentally pry open that gray metal door and figure out what makes these things tick. I've got the technical handbooks, the safety standards right here, but I need you to be the guide. Because when I look at a schematic, it just looks like a subway map drawn by a madman. Where do we even start?
The best way to decode it is to realize that the panel isn't just one big circuit. It's actually split into two very distinct worlds. You have the power circuits and the control circuits.
Okay, is that just the difference in, wire size, big wires versus small wires?
That's part of it, but it's really about function. Think of the power circuit as the muscle.
The muscle.
Yeah, this is the brute force side of the panel.
Mm-hmm.
These circuits take the high voltage, the main power, and shove it directly into the loads.
And by loads, you mean the machinery itself.
Right. Huge industrial motors, massive heaters, the lighting for an entire floor. The power circuit is carrying the main current, 400 volts and maybe hundreds of amps. It's doing all the heavy lifting.
Okay, so if the power circuit is the muscle, where does the control circuit fit in?
The control circuit is the brain. And here's the critical safety part. The brain never touches the heavyweight. The control circuit runs on a much, much lower voltage, typically 24 volts DC, maybe 110 AC. Its only job is to make decisions.
Decisions like turn on or turn off.
Exactly. But it also handles the logic, wait 5 seconds, then turn on, or only turn on if the temperature is below 50 degrees. That kind of thing.
So let me ask you this. If I'm in a factory and I press a big green start button for a conveyor belt, which circuit am I actually touching?
You are strictly in the control circuit.
Yeah.
And that is a very good thing. If that button were part of the power circuit, you'd have 400 volts running through that little plastic switch right under your thumb.
Which sounds, yeah, that sounds terrifying.
It would be. Instead, that button sends a polite, low voltage signal to the brain. The brain says, okay, operator wants the motor on. It then activates something called a contactor coil, which uses a little magnet to slam the heavy power switches shut. The muscle flexes, but your finger was never anywhere near the danger zone.
That makes perfect sense. You separate the logic from the lethality. But speaking of the muscle, I saw a note in here about inrush currents. Sounds like something from a disaster movie. What is that?
It's a huge problem for the power circuit. Think about pushing a stalled car. Getting it moving from a dead stop takes a huge amount of effort, right?
Yeah.
Way more than just keeping it rolling.
Right. You have to really heave against it at first.
Electrical motors are exactly the same. When you first hit start, that motor is dead weight. To get it spinning, it just gulps down this massive surge of current, sometimes 6 or 7 times its normal running power. That's the inrush.
Wow. So the components in that power circuit have to be tough enough to survive that massive spike every single time you turn the machine on.
Exactly. If you built the system for just the average current, it would melt the first time you started it up.
Okay. So we've got muscle handling the power, brain making the decisions. But let's talk about when things go wrong. Because with that much power moving around, the potential for disaster seems pretty high. I see circuit breakers in the nose. I have these in my house. I get, plug in a space heater, the hair dryer's running, the lights go out. I go downstairs and clip the switch.
It feels simple, doesn't it? Just an off switch that trips itself. But inside an industrial breaker like an MCCB, a molded case circuit breaker, there's a miniature war going on.
Mm.
It has to defend against two completely different types of enemies. So it uses a two-tier protection system.
Two tiers. Okay, what's the first enemy?
The first enemy is the overload. This is the slow creeper. It's like your space heater example. You're pulling just a little bit too much current for too long. The wires start to heat up like a toaster. If they stay hot, the insulation melts and you've got a fire. But it takes time.
So how does the breaker catch a slow creeper?
It uses a thermal trip. Inside the breaker, there's a bimetal strip.
Bimetal, so two different metals fused together.
Exactly. Two different metals bonded together. As current flows through them, they heat up. But because they're different metals, they expand at different rates, which causes the whole strip to physically curl, to bend.
It actually bends.
Yes. It's a mechanical reaction to heat. If it bends far enough, it hits a latch, click, and the breaker trips.
Yeah.
But because it relies on heat, it has a built-in delay. This is what allows for those inrush currents we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
The motor can spike for a few seconds and the breaker's fine because the metal strip hasn't heated up enough to bend yet.
That is surprisingly analog for such a high-tech box. It's just bending metal.
Physics is reliable.
Hmm.
But then you have the second enemy, the short circuit.
And this one is not a slow creeper.
No. This is an explosion. This is when two live wires touch or a wire hits the metal case.
Hmm.
The current doesn't just go up a little bit, it skyrockets. We're talking thousands of amps in a fraction of a second. You cannot wait for a metal strip to warm up. You need to cut the power now.
So how does it react faster than heat?
Magnets. The second tier is the magnetic trip. There's a solenoid coil inside. If the current hits that massive fault threshold, the magnetic field is instantly strong enough to physically slam the latch open. We're talking milliseconds. It's the difference between braking slowly and hitting a brick wall.
So thermal for the slow burn, magnetic for the instant disaster. That's the two-tier system. Now, I saw a specific warning in the research about MCBs, the little breakers. It said, never use an MCB as a light switch. And I feel like I see people do this all the time in workshops. They just reach into the panel and flip the breakers to kill the lights.
It is a terrible habit. Please, if you're listening, stop doing that.
Why, though? It turns the lights off.
It does, but an MCB, a miniature circuit breaker, is a safety device, not a control switch. The internal mechanism is spring-loaded. It's designed to snap open to save your life. It's not built to be clicked on and off thousands of times. If you use it as a light switch, you wear out the spring tension.
So you're wearing out the airbag by punching it every day.
That is a perfect analogy. Eventually, on the day you actually have a short circuit, the mechanism might jam, or it might be too slow to clear the fault. You've compromised your safety gear just for convenience.
Okay, lesson learned. Use a proper switch. Now, for the bigger industrial breakers, the MCCBs, there was a feature mentioned called trip-free. That sounds like a travel agency perk, but I'm guessing it's not.
No, no vacation involved, sadly. It's actually a critical man versus physics feature. Imagine a worst-case scenario. There's a massive fault in a machine. The breaker trips.
Mm.
An operator, maybe they're panicked, maybe they just really need to get production running. They run over and try to force the handle back up.
They try to reset it while the fault is still there.
Right. And let's say they hold the handle in the on-in position with all their strength. Without a trip-free mechanism, they would be physically forcing the contacts to touch while thousands of amps are trying to arc across them. It would be a catastrophe.
So they're overriding the safety system.
They're trying to.
Yeah.
But the trip-free mechanism mechanically disconnects the handle from the actual contacts inside.
Mm.
Even if you use all your strength to hold that handle up, if the fault is still there, the internal mechanism will just disengage from your hand and pop the contacts open anyway.
So the breaker basically says, I don't care how hard you push, I am not closing.
Exactly. It prioritizes physics over human stupidity.
All right.
Or, you know, desperation. You cannot force it to kill you.
That's actually really reassuring. So we've established we shouldn't use breakers as switches. What are we supposed to use? The notes mention contactors and disconnectors. They sound the same.
They sound similar, but confusing them is one of the most dangerous mistakes you can make in this field. Let's start with a disconnector.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's called an isolator.
Okay. What's its job?
Its job is to provide a visible gap in the circuit. That's it. It's a safety lock. When you need to repair a machine, you open the disconnector so you can physically see, okay, the copper is separated, no power can get to me.
Right. Safety first.
But here's a golden rule. A disconnector is a non-load brake device. You must never open it while the current is flowing. Never. These switches are not designed to handle the electric arc that forms when you pull contacts apart. If you pull that handle while a motor is running, the electricity will literally try to jump the gap. It creates an arc, basically a plasma explosion, right in your face.
Okay, that is a very visceral image.
Yeah.
So the disconnector is only for when the machine is already off, dead.
Correct. If you want to turn things on and off while they're running, that's when you use a contactor.
Contactor, that's the workhorse.
Yes. Contactors are built with things called arc chutes and heavy contacts. They're designed to contain that little explosion every single time you switch it off. But even then, you can't just grab any contactor. You have to look at the utilization categories. You'll see these codes like AC1, AC3, AC4.
I saw those in the handbook. It looked like a tax form.
It's basically a difficulty setting for the switch. AC1 is easy mode heaters, you know, things that don't fight back. AC3 is your standard industrial motor. It can handle that inrush current. But AC4...
What's AC4?
AC4 is extreme mode. That is for when you are jogging or plugging a motor.
Jogging? You mean like bumping it into position?
Yeah, rapidly starting and stopping it to nudge a conveyor or reversing it instantly. That puts incredible stress on the contacts. It generates immense heat. If you use a standard AC3 switch for an AC4 job, the contacts will get so hot they will literally weld themselves together.
Weld together so you can't turn it off.
Exactly. You hit the stop button, the brain tells the coil to let go, but the metal contacts are fused solid. Now you have a runaway machine and you're running for the main breaker.
That seems like a detail you really, really want to get right in the design phase.
You'd be surprised how often it's overlooked.
Okay, I want to pivot to something that confused me. We're talking about massive amounts of power here. Thousands of amps. How do you actually measure that? I mean, if I want to know how much current a factory is drawing, I can't just stick a little multimeter on a bus bar carrying 5,000 amps. It would just vaporize the meter, right?
It would vaporize the meter and probably take your eyebrows with it.
Yeah.
To measure that kind of power, we have to scale it down. We use instrument transformers, specifically the current transformer, or CT.
How does a CT work?
Think of it as a translator. It's a ring that sits on the big power line, the primary circuit, and it induces a tiny proportional current in a secondary loop. So it might take, say, 5,000 amps on the big line and step it down to just 5 amps on the little wire that goes to your meter.
Okay, so 5 amps is safe. A delicate meter can handle that.
Precisely.
Yeah.
It keeps the high voltage completely away from the operator. But, and this is a huge safety warning that every single electrical apprentice gets yelled at about, there is a trap with CTs.
A trap?
You know how usually opening a circuit makes it safe? If you cut a wire, the power stops flowing.
Sure, open circuit, no flow.
With a CT, it is the exact opposite. You must never leave the secondary wires of a CT open while the main power is active.
Wait, why? If the loop is open, shouldn't the current just stop?
No, because the CT is what we call a current source. It is trying to force that 5 amps to flow no matter what. Think of it like a powerful water pump pushing into a pipe. If you suddenly block the end of the pipe, which is what opening the circuit does, the pump doesn't just stop. It pushes harder. The pressure builds up instantly.
And in electrical terms, pressure is voltage.
Exactly. The CT tries to force the current through the air to complete the circuit. The voltage can spike to thousands of volts in a millisecond. It can blow the insulation, cause an arc, and electrocute anyone standing nearby.
So to make it safe, you actually have to short circuit it.
Yes. You have to connect the two wires together to give the current a safe place to go.
That is completely counterintuitive. Short the circuit to make it safe.
That's why it's so dangerous. It goes against all your instincts.
There's another type of transformer in the Nates that sounded fascinating, the core balance CT. It sounded less like a measurement tool and more like a detective.
That's a great description. The core balance CT, or CBCT, is the heart of earth fault protection. It's a ring that goes around all the wires, the phases, and the neutral at the same time.
Why wrap around all of them at once?
It's doing accounting. In a healthy system, the current going out to the load should exactly equal the current coming back. If 50 amps go out, 50 amps come back. The magnetic fields cancel each other out. The sum is zero.
Okay, so the CBCT just sees zero.
Right, but if current leaks somewhere, say, through a frayed wire to the metal case, or God forbid, through a person to the ground, then the math doesn't add up. 50 amps went out, but only 49 came back.
The accountant notices a missing amp.
Exactly. The vector sum is no longer zero. The CBCT detects that tiny imbalance instantly and trips the earth fault relay, shutting everything down. It detects the leak before it becomes a fatal shock or a fire.
It's amazing that it can detect such a tiny difference in such a massive flow.
It saves lives every single day.
We're getting near the end here, and we need to talk about what holds all this together. We've talked about the components, but what is the actual infrastructure inside the box? I see the term bus bars.
Bus bars are the backbone. In a big panel, you don't use flexible wires for the main power. You use rigid bars of copper or aluminum. They look like shiny metallic tracks running up the back of the cabinet.
So these are the main arteries.
Yes. But there's some serious physics involving bus bars that people often overlook. When we talk about short circuits, we've been talking about heat, right? Things melting. But a short circuit is also a violent physical event.
Violent, you mean like moving parts?
We're talking about electrodynamic forces. When current flows through a conductor, it creates a magnetic field. Now, when you have a massive fault current, say 50,000 amps flowing through two parallel bus bars, those magnetic fields interact. They either attract or repel the bars with just incredible force.
So the copper bars themselves actually try to move.
They don't just try. If they aren't supported correctly, they can rip themselves right off the wall. They can bend, snap, or shatter the porcelain insulators holding them in place.
I had no idea. I just pictured them sitting there passively carrying electricity. I didn't realize they were fighting to stay attached to the panel.
That's why the spacing of the supports is so critical. The handbook mentions supports every 100 millimeter or 200 millimeter depending on the fault level. It's not just to hold the weight of the copper. It's to mechanically brace against that magnetic explosion during a fault.
That puts a whole new perspective on those little plastic or porcelain insulators. They're not just spacers. They're structural supports against magnetic violence.
Precisely. And if the air gap isn't big enough, or if the bars move too much, you get flashover. The air itself breaks down and becomes conductive.
Which leads us right back to the arc flash.
It always comes back to the arc flash.
So we have cracked open the box. We've seen the power and control circuits, the whole muscle versus brain idea. We've met the bodyguards, the breakers with their thermal and magnetic senses. We learned why you don't use a breaker as a switch and the danger of that stubborn pump, the CT.
It really is a marvel of coordination when you think about it. You have all these different parts, some moving, some static, some are digital, some are purely mechanical, all working in this strict hierarchy.
It makes me respect the engineering so much more. It's not just about wiring things up. It's anticipating failure at every single level.
That is the key. Engineering discipline. Following standards like the IEC isn't just bureaucracy. Proper selection of curves, precise settings, calculating those fault forces, that is what stands between a functioning facility and a catastrophic fire. It's a silent discipline.
And that's a great image to end on. The next time you walk past that locked gray cabinet in the basement or down the hallway, don't just ignore it. There is a silent, high-speed, digital and physical guardian in there, watching the math on every single electron, ready to take a hit to keep you safe.
Couldn't have said it better myself. It's a thankless job, but an essential one.
Thanks for diving into the nerve center with us. Until next time, stay curious.
And stay safe.